Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Pauly says I should jump in and not let the entire Jukebox Hero play like we usually do on Tuesdays when we're just kind of casually coming back for the second half of the show because we have Padres CEO Eric Rupner on the line. Maybe I should just ask Eric Rupner, though. Do you want to hear, Eric, all of Jukebox Hero here for our reopen, or do you just want to start kind of just getting going with the interview?
Love Jukebox Hero.
Yeah.
Let's get at it.
Let's get at it. All right, we'll get at it. Welcome back. It is Ben, Pauly. Woods will be back tomorrow, but today we've got the CEO of the Padres, Eric Rupner, who is on. And first of all, Eric, I mean, a lot of excitement, especially here since the All-Star break, a no-hitter. Winning 11 of your first 14 games since the break. You got a wild card race. You got a division race with the Dodgers. I'd imagine it's a fun time to be there at the offices at Petco Park.
It's a great time. A lot of energy in the office, a lot of energy in the ballpark. All starts with our fans. I mean, they've just been willing a lot of this into existence all year long, showing up, continuing to just bring passionate support for this team. And we've got an outstanding manager, Mike Schilt, that from spring training on has preached, you get better as the season goes, you get better as the game goes. And I think we're starting to really see that play out over the course of the season.
I know you sent out those season ticket renewal emails last night, and we're going to talk about it. But I first want to ask you, because you just talked about the job Mike Schilt has done. And I remember back in spring training, you were standing next to Eric Kutsenda and talking about, you know, everybody has goals and is going to be evaluated, including AJ Preller and Mike Schilt and everybody in your office. And I get it. There's still a couple of months left, and those final evaluations won't come until after the season is over. But just in the view of the CEO, the job that the president of baseball operations, AJ Preller, has done this season in your mind.
Yeah, I think AJ has done an outstanding job. You know, AJ will be the first to tell you that it's more than just him. You know, he has an outstanding group of people around him, but he is the leader on that side of our operations. And I think going back to earlier, you know, right before the season started, to make the acquisition of Dylan Cease, to then acquire Luis Arraez, you know, those are arguably two of the biggest trade deadline acquisitions. They were just made significantly earlier in the season. So I think the sense to know when players might be available, a little off cycle, go get them, you know, and get them opportunistically when they're available and not have to compete against, you know, 6, 7, 8 other teams as we did at the deadline with a lot of the players that we were interested in, I think turns out to be a real stroke of genius this year. And you know, a lot of the pieces that were added to this team to really complete and lengthen the lineup, whether it be Donovan Solano or David Peralta, I think have really performed at or above a level that we could have expected. Jerickson Profar. And then, you know, just really going back to the Juan Soto trade and the pieces that we got back, whether it was Michael King or adding controllable, you know, pieces to the starting rotation for years to come, potentially in Vasquez and Brito. And Kyle Higashioka has, you know, really come through in some key moments for us. So, you know, I think all the way up until the deadline and then through the deadline, you know, we've just continued to improve this team. And I think you're starting to see that on full display now that we're in the stretch run here at the end of the season.
Are you okay? I mean, AJ, again, very aggressive at the trade deadline, adding two of the top relievers in the game, but obviously sending out a lot of those prospects out there. I mean, as an organization, you're okay with that strategy?
I think it's always going to be a balance
yeah.
for us in this market. As I've said previously, I think we have to continue to develop the Jackson Merrills players that we draft and develop and then bring to the major league level. And for a number of years, they have high impact at the major league level while making a league minimum or through their arbitration years, you know, less money than big free agents. We've made long-term commitments to a lot of big free agents, and so we have to have that balance. And, you know, you find that balance a few different ways. You know, hopefully more often than not, you're finding it through homegrown talent, players that you've drafted and developed in your system. There's also times where coming back in trades, you know, I mentioned a moment ago the Juan Soto trade. I think even, you know, Jason Adam and others that still have a number of years of control. Sometimes you get players back in trades. And then, you know, you stack up good drafts year after year after year, and you continually replenish that farm system. And, you know, that is AJ's area of expertise with the group of advisors that he has around him and our baseball operations team. And I think at the end of the day, we trust that the assessments of who's going to have a long-term impact at the major league level are being done correctly. And I believe to date, you know, nobody bats 1,000, but I think there's been a lot of really good decisions made on long-term impact players that we've kept in our system. Leo DeVries, Ethan Salas, others that we already have in our system. I think there's a lot of talent still left in the system that's going to come. And you don't get established, you know, high-leverage relievers in a trade market like we have this year without being willing to pay, you know, a price to get those players. It's a competitive trade market. And I think, you know, if anything, this just signals that we continue to be all in on trying to win a World Series championship for San Diego.
Talking to Padres CEO Eric Grubner here on 97.3 The Fan. And as we mentioned, the season ticket renewal email that went out yesterday. And I think for fans, the most important thing is they want to see winning and see the Padres go for a championship, which you've definitely been trying to do. But fans are also usually family members, and for families, usually the budget like is the most important thing. And I know you guys take it seriously. So what's you announced a small increase from last year, about 3%, according to the email. Some will be a little bit more, some will be less, as the email said. What's the case, and what goes into the decision making process for you guys when it comes to deciding on season ticket renewals for next season?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we put a tremendous amount of time and intentionality into that analysis, and you know, it begins first and foremost with the continued commitment that we've made to the ballpark. You know, even though we didn't have a year this year where we increased payroll year over year, in fact, we've gone in a different direction this year. You know, we've had a sustained period, extended period of years where we have really significantly increased payroll. And that's all been an effort to field year in and year out a competitive team that can compete for the playoffs and the World Series championship. And that comes, the reality of it is that comes at a cost. And I've said this before, but, you know, the outlook that we've had for years and continue to have is, you know, we are looking to put the very best team we can on the field, and that may look, the approach to doing that may look a little different one year versus another. But at the end of the day, that baseline commitment is there, and we're not looking to make money off of running the operation of the team. We're looking to put anything that we can generate by way of increased revenue completely back into the team, and run it in a responsible way, in a way that is hopefully continues to be competitive year in and year out. So the reality of that is, you know, inflation has, you know, for most of the year, I think been running in excess of 3%, but we felt like 3% was a fair and reasonable amount of increase this year, reflecting the rising costs we have of operating the business and maintaining the competitive team on the field. It was definitely at the very low end of the range that we looked at, and is meant to be a message to the fan base that nobody ever likes prices going up, even if it's only 3%. But at the end of the day, we're trying to be as reasonable as we can and acknowledge the fact that our fans are the best in baseball. They continue to show up and support us in record numbers. There's high demand to come see this team. And we're just incredibly grateful for our fans and the response that we've had and their willingness, you know, to continue to come back and hopefully support us again next year.
Eric, yeah, you mentioned in that email the obviously the huge changes at Gallagher Square, which have been very well received. And you also mentioned additional, quote, impactful improvements in this coming offseason. I don't know if there's anything you can share with us, but what are some of the things that maybe you could just in terms of the future plans for Petco Park and keeping it the number one ballpark in baseball?
Yeah, so we're not quite ready yet to share publicly the details of what we plan to do this offseason, but we have a couple of projects that are going to be really impactful. They're going to focus on the Western Metal Building, and so we're excited when the time is right to share those details with our fans and the public. And that's really what I was referencing there, and it's going to be a couple of projects all within the envelope of the Western Metal Building. And we try to really methodically continue on a multi-year phased approach to maintain and improve the ballpark in a way that keeps it looking no more than 5 years old. That's our standard. Obviously, the 20th anniversary of the ballpark this year, we're really proud of the way that it looks and the way that it functions for our fans. But every year, we're looking at ways to continue to improve fan experience, taking feedback from our fans through regular surveys, and then ultimately continually making the investment into the ballpark every offseason to improve and maintain it.
I like that. It's a little teaser. Get people speculating on what might happen, but some excitement. Obviously, the Western Metal Building is a big part of the ballpark and one of the things that makes Petco Park distinct. Now, Gallagher Square, one of the improvements, you know, with better sight lines and the hillside and the bigger screen, we've seen record crowds. You guys have been able to get more people in those seats, or not seats, but certainly in the area out there. How has that gone from a kind of a management standpoint? Obviously, you know, you have to, you know, the difference may seem small between 45,000 and 47, but you've gotten up over 47,000 just the last homestand with the new record against the Dodgers.
Yeah, you know, we learned a lot, Ben, in the first 19 years of operating the ballpark, and in particular Gallagher Square, regarding just how we could optimize that space for fan experience. You know, first and foremost for 81 home Padres games, and then secondarily to continue to fulfill the promise of more than a ballpark and all the other events, concerts and otherwise that we host there in Gallagher Square, really has become a very vibrant part of the ballpark, and we've used it more and more and more as the years have gone on. So, you know, if I would just say to get that project done as we did in 4 months from start to finish is a testament to some really great leaders that we have in our area of ballpark operations and managing our construction projects, because to get anything done in 4 months, especially in the state of California, which is not necessarily streamlined to get projects done from a permitting and other perspective, you know, was really a Herculean feat. And we're really pleased with the way that it came out. I think you mentioned a few of the attributes that have been really well received by the fans. First and foremost, creating an all-new sight line with the Tony Gwynn Terrace, elevating Mr. Padre by about 10 feet, so he's now visible from more of the ballpark, creating the Tony Gwynn Tunnel underneath the terrace where a new generation of Padres fans can continue to learn about the great career and life, both on and off the field, of Tony Gwynn. And then to create, you know, a new experience out there for families and kids with a all-new playground, wiffle ball field that's in a more optimal location, and then to triple the size of the video board. So now wherever you are in Gallagher Square, you've got a view of the game, not only a new sight line down to the field, but also you still feel connected to the game. So it's been really enjoyable for those of us that have put a ton of time and effort both into the planning and then the execution of that project to just walk out there and see our fans enjoy the space. And that's the ultimate reward, you know, in what we do, is to see fans come and have a great time with people that they love, friends, family, kids, see generations of Padres fans connecting, cheering the team on, and just having a good time at the ballpark.
And then lastly, and not trying to jinx anything, but you guys have to plan no matter what. How do season ticket renewals impact potential playoff tickets and home games that could, you know, possibly be happening at Petco Park in October?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we're at a point now where we've continually grown what has become a every year a new record level of a season ticket member base. And the reality of that is, and hopefully it's a reality we live this year in the postseason, but it's never been more important to be a season ticket member because, you know, postseason tickets are increasingly scarce with the size of season ticket member base that we have right now. So if you think about it, it's a lot like opening day where we've got a lot of half season plans. And if you have two half season plans, you know, inherently they don't have the same seat for every game. So you essentially double the number of people that get access to tickets for one game. And so we don't anticipate there being a ton of tickets available for public on sale during the postseason. The vast majority of those tickets will all be sold to our season ticket members through our pre-sale process. So it's really a great way for us to be able to say to our season ticket members, you know, thank you. You get continue to get priority for the postseason because of your longstanding commitment to the Padres and your support for this team. And as we saw in 2022, and hopefully we'll see again this year, you know, our fans show up for the postseason like no other. You know, that NLDS series against the Dodgers was magical. You know, it was 98% Padres fans. It was a true home field advantage, and that matters most in the postseason. So we're calling on our fans to really support us down the stretch here to continue to bring the energy night in, night out, which has just been outstanding this year. The players feel it. Coaches feel it. We feel it in the front office. We're so incredibly grateful for it. And then if we do end up making the postseason, which is certainly our plan, to then welcome all those fans in for just an electric environment in the postseason and one of the best home field advantages in all pro sports.
Eric, appreciate the time. Good luck to the team going forward on this road trip and the rest of the season. And hopefully we will see more playoff baseball in October at Petco Park. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Padres CEO Eric Roepner with us. And yes, I understand. I see you in the chat. They're not in the playoffs yet. Don't talk about it. You can't just wait until like the last day of the season when you clinch a playoff spot and then go, oh, no, we need to plan for playoff series now. Do you want to sell some tickets? What do you want to do? They have to start planning now. That's how it works. And it's interesting what he said because I hadn't thought about it in a long time. But I remember back in 1984 when I was growing up and my dad and grandparents had season tickets. They had four seats, but it was half season. So they had the 41 game plan or whatever it was. So every other game, four tickets, which was cool. But then when the playoffs came around, you could get two tickets because it was only a half season plan. You couldn't get four because the other people who had the same tickets also wanted their tickets as well. So you just had to do two. So it was always the harder decision. Well, who are we going to take to the game now? You can't take the whole family. You have to pick your favorite people who get to go to the game. So that is part of the equation when you have, you know, half season ticket packages and stuff. When you get to the postseason, it will be harder to get those playoff tickets, which means you could either listen on 97.3 The Fan or watch on TV. But what if you're not there for a moment like Jake Cronenworth singling against the Dodgers and the rain falling and everybody singing together and you go like, oh, I wanted to be there for that. That's always the risk when you're not at the game, that you don't get to experience that. But hey, to everybody their own, everybody's budget, you all have to make your own decisions. Eric Roepner laid out how they do it, how they plan it, and I thought explained it pretty well. But anyway, if you've got some thoughts, you can join us, 833-288-0973. You can react to that, continue our conversation, and my colleague from ABC 10 News, Wally Aliu, is going to be in studio to carry us through for the rest of Woods' vacation, which is now only got about an hour and a half plus left. And hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. We'll check traffic.
Get
and
your ass back here, Woods.
Return with more Ben and Woods next on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, thanks again to Padres CEO Eric Rupner. Gave his case as to why you should renew your season tickets. That's fine. I appreciate that. And I certainly understand the argument. I went back to the that Civil Luthio had the comment in our earlier segment about, you know, if they're selling out and the Padres lower ticket prices, you're just going to pay higher on the resale and you're still going to get, you know, pay through the nose for tickets. It's just not the Padres who are going to get it. I think this is the same kind of dry humor that I would employ. He doesn't have an LOL, though, but he says, hopefully the Padres suck for the next few years, and it lowers demand for tickets, so the prices do go down. That would be great.
I don't want that.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, what's the alternative here? Yeah, it's probably less expensive to go to a Chicago White Sox game right now. You probably get in for next to nothing if you want to go see if they're going to lose a 22nd game in a row today. Or, you know, this is the alternative. And I've been to plenty of Padres seasons where it's been empty and ticket prices have been low. And, you know, I have a good time at the game. And you go and you don't really care if they win or not because it doesn't mean anything. I prefer this. I really do. Now, again, cost is high. It really is. And, you know, you got other things that you need to spend your money on. And it's very sad if there are fans out there who wish they could go to games and they simply can't afford it. Yeah. But that's always going to be a reality for some people. And we'll see. I mean, if the Padres charge too much, the fans will let them know. You will see it. The attendance will go down. And ultimately, they'll have to make a correction and they'll have to figure out, well, okay, this isn't working for us and we need to figure out the right level of what to charge where we still get people in the seats, but, you know, aren't underselling our product as well. So I do appreciate Eric Rupner joining us and at least giving us their perspective again. You know, 3% increase. I know it's more for some people. I saw people mentioning, you know, there are member perks, but they go, I wish we had more or different ones. That's kind of a personal preference thing as well. You were a member in 2021. I mean, do you feel like the perks were beneficial to you as a member?
Didn't have a ton. We had a very basic 40 sure. game plan that me and Woods split, and I, you know, kind of in a weird spot because I just wasn't really pursuing a lot of the member. Like we had we got discounts on merch
right.
and early access or early entry into the stadium.
10% off concessions,
yeah.
I think.
That's pretty much all that we did. I didn't go to like a member photo day or anything like that. And I've seen people have great experiences with that. I've had other people go, well, I got my ticket or my photo day announcement, but it was for a game that I didn't have tickets to. Like I had Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and member photo day was on a Thursday or something like that. So, yeah, that's something I'm sure that can always be improved. But ultimately, I think, yeah, I can understand perks being like a high. Like that's something like simple and tangible that you can be like, I, as a season ticket holder, would like more of this.
We also, he mentioned the postseason coming up. And I saw this note yesterday or the other day, and I thought it was just worth mentioning. The Major League Baseball has announced a small change to how they're going to do the postseason this year, and that is a bit of flex scheduling. So apparently how it works is the World Series is scheduled to begin on October 25th, and if it goes all the way to a Game 7, it goes into early November. I think Jesse had said, hey, hopefully we're still calling games in early November. However, they have decided, and I think this is smart, if both the ALCS and the NLCS end in 5 games or less, then they're going to start the World Series on October 22nd. And they're not just going to have an extra you know, 5 or 6 days in between the championship series and the World Series. And if that's the case, even if it went 7 games, it would end in October and not November, which is actually makes a lot of sense. If you can do it, there's no reason that you have to just wait and date prescribed. Yes. When both the teams are done and they're just sitting around, what you're losing all your momentum.
You say that every
in the postseason.
Year when there's like a sweep. You're like, so that team, they just got to wait around for
a week
plus before the next series begins.
So, and it's possible if one series is a sweep, the other goes seven, the team that swept will still have to wait around because, you know, you can't help that. But there's no reason if both series get over quickly in 4 or 5 games, you shouldn't just move on to the next series. So that's one small change they're making for the postseason coming up this year. The wild card series will begin on October 1st, which I believe is just two days after the last game of the regular season. If the Padres make the playoffs, obviously they could be at Petco Park if they're either the... Well, they probably won't be the third seeded division champion. They could catch the Dodgers. I'd assume if they do, they would also catch the Brewers as well. I mean, it's not a guarantee, but if they're the number one wild card, they could host that best of three series like they did in 2020. But if they're the 2 or 3 wild card like they were in 2022, they'd have to go on the road like they did to the New York Mets. And those 3 games would start, usually they're just 3 days in a row, I think. So it'd be the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of October. So Major League Baseball this week announcing some of their plans coming up for the postseason this year. And obviously, fingers crossed that the Padres will be very much part of those plans. I did see the ESPN came out yesterday. They ranked their most likely wild card teams after the trade deadline. And they had the Padres 2nd in the National League, behind only the Arizona Diamondbacks, who they said is their most likely wild card winner, then the Padres, and then they went down from there. But the conference is pretty high. What was your FanGraphs today? It was 75%.
Padres sitting at 75.
So, you know, they're right now in a 3-way tie with the Braves and the Diamondbacks. But there are still plenty of teams that could catch any of those three. The New York Mets are first up. They're a game and a half back. They won yesterday. Sean Manaea has been lights out. And I'm probably never going to get over the fact that Sean Manaea has found a new reinvigorated passion for working hard late in the season, which seemed to be missing back in 2022 when he finished so poorly and had nothing left in the playoffs for the Padres. But
and then
he's
came
been
out
pitching
and
well
said he was lazy.
Yeah. He's been pitching very well for the Mets all season long, but especially of late. And he pitched him to a shutout win yesterday. So they're 6 games above 500, game and a half back. Now, they beat the Cardinals. Cardinals are now 4 out, and the Pirates are 4 out. Padres do well this series. They could pretty much take the Pirates out. You know, the Cardinals struggle for a week. The Giants are 4.5. It would be nice if it was at least no more than a 4-team race for 3 spots. That makes everybody's
job a little bit
easier if you do it that. So we'll be keeping a close eye. It's time for scoreboard watching, no doubt about it. All right, we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, going to be fun. I'm going to be joined by one of my other work colleagues, ABC 10 News anchor Wale Aliyu's in the building. Going to sit down with us for the remainder of the program today. We'll learn about his career, talk some sports, and hopefully just have a good time. Still have a Rondo report coming up as well. Don't go away. It's Ben and it is Paul finishing up Woodsy's vacation today on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Baseball coverage at 97.3 The Fan is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile. You can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Well, this is new territory for me coming up. I don't know that I have ever not had the deepest, richest voice on a radio program that I have hosted.
Good morning.
Uh-oh. But, I mean, you know, now there's some competition here because joining me, pleasure to see him, is my colleague for the year now?
But so it'll be 2 years in September.
2 years in September, right, so a year and a half plus now. ABC 10 News anchor. You can catch him on the evening news with Kimberly Hunt most evenings. Wale Aliyu is sitting in with me for Woodsy here for the rest of the show today. Wale, thank you for getting up early and coming in.
It is good to be here. Where is the sound effect round of applause slash excitement? Come on, I needed that. There we go. Thank you, San Diego. It's good to be here. It's good to see everybody.
It's good to have you. I'm going to ask you a little bit. I mean, you know, even though you've been here for a year and a half, you're still kind of the new guy in town.
I am.
So I'm going to ask you a little bit about your career and just get to know you a little bit more. In fact, I need to get to know you a little bit more. We've been in the Channel 10 building remodeling for most of the time Wale's been here. So we've all been kind of separated in temporary offices until the last couple of weeks when we moved into our new newsroom. And now Wale and I are desk mates. We are sitting right next to each other.
My desk buddy.
So I'm starting to learn a little bit more about Wale. But
you got to smell my food yesterday.
I did. You brought in something.
What's on the menu? What do we have?
It was like a pasta sort of thing.
Tomato well, base. I bring it. Like, what is that?
I mean, you know.
I'm hungry.
We're just a normal office just like everybody else. Everyone thinks, oh, TV, it's just glamorous. No, it's people microwaving stuff in the in the break room just like everybody everywhere else. And, you know, like, what did you bring in? That's not great. You know, you fight over the cookie. If people
who brought in
cookies.
The fish? Who was that?
Who brought in, who microwaved the fish in the break room? Got the same issues as everybody else. So we're going to check traffic, and we're going to chat with Wale Aliyu coming up here on 97.3 The Fan. So people sometimes ask me, how did you get into TV and radio? And my path into this life is very weird and unusual, and it's not really something most people can duplicate. I have never left San Diego.
Wow.
I grew up here. I started working radio, quickly switched over to TV, and I've been at Channel 10 for the past 20 years, the past 18 of them as the sports director. It's not how it usually works in TV. The normal course of events is you get your first job at kind of a smaller market, and then if you do well there, you move into maybe a mid-sized market, and then maybe a larger market. You start as a reporter and move up to an anchor. And Wale, I know your last stop, you came from Boston, right? So, but what's kind of been, tell me a little bit about, I don't even know the answer to this, your whole kind of progression of how you got into TV and how you ended up as the evening anchor on ABC 10 News.
I actually love sharing this story because it gives hope to some of your kids out there who might be listening. But I didn't know anything about journalism growing up. Like my parents would be watching the news, and I'd be like, that's boring. Put on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Let's have some fun. And then when I was 14 years old, my mom signs me up for like this 2-year like summer program. But the first year, they put me in a hospital doing some secretarial work, and I was bored out of my mind. I'm like, get me out of here. I begged the program organizers, like, please, 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 next summer, put me somewhere more fun. And they were like, I think we got just the thing for you. So they put me at a TV station. I grew up in Columbia, Missouri. It's it's halfway between St. Louis and Kansas City, for anyone who's familiar with the Midwest.
That's where Missouri Tigers are, right?
That's where the Missouri Tigers are, for the Tigers fans. Shout out MIZ. So I'm already in a city with a prominent journalism school. Like, this journalism school is ranked one of the best in the world. I just happen to be there. So they have their own TV station at the school. So it's an NBC affiliate. And so when I was 15 years old, they let me come and work in the newsroom then. And I'm just like mind blown. Like, this is so cool. Lights, camera, action. I knew nothing about journalism. And I started asking a million questions to everybody that works there. And they told me what classes to take, where to go to school, and all these things. And I just jumped right in. So I went to Mizzou. I worked in Columbia, Missouri for a couple years. Got laid off in 08 during the craziness of recession. Substitute taught for a little bit. Got back in the business. Got a job in Dayton, Ohio. Used that to get a job in Cleveland, Ohio. I worked in New York City at a flagship station there, WNBC. It's a great market, top market. Then
New York?
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
I wanted to do some anchoring, so I went to Boston, and then I used that to get a job here in San Diego.
So how has your experience then been? I mean, you know, adjusting to San Diego is a different market than anywhere else, from what I've been told and what I can glean. Not that I would know personally, but I've had enough people who kind of come in and just knowing, you know, even on a sports fan level, San Diego is different than everywhere else. I mean, I think there's a pride about where everybody lives and where you grow up, and you have pride in where you're from. But here in San Diego, we're kind of nutty about it. I mean, it's like, if you're not San Diego, it sometimes can be hard to adjust and adapt and be accepted. How has that gone for you so far?
Bro, I love San Diego. First of all, okay, so when I would work in the, I mean, I, you know, you're right. Everywhere you have this kind of ethnocentrism to where you are, and you kind of represent, hey, this is where I'm from. And every city I've lived and worked in has been great in its own way, but I first visited San Diego, let me tell you, in 2010. And I, you know, growing up in the Midwest, we didn't have palm trees or beaches, oceans, none of that. So I see the city and I'm like, this city is gorgeous. If I could ever live and work here, it's a wrap. So I was already had an affinity for San Diego. So then I got this job offer and I was like, heck yeah. And I freaking loved it, man. This place is amazing. Like, okay, so weather is important to me, right? And San Diego's got one of the best weathers in the country, if not the world, right? 60 to 80 degrees year-round, day-night, it's perfect. So that alone has been beautiful. The people here, everybody's nice. Like, you can't be mad. So I lived in New York City for a little bit, and I always joke about how in New York City, for anybody who's ever lived there or worked there, everyone, they kind of have the reputation of being a little mean, right? Like, they walk down the street with the fist clenched, like, I'm ready to fight whoever. I got my mace ready. And they're not bad people in New York City. It's just you're a product of your environment, right? So you're just like, I missed the train today. I'm late for work. Somebody stepped on my J's. Of course I have an attitude. But if you took those same people and you put them in San Diego, I promise you, they would be frolicking up and down the street near Petco. Like, they would just be happy-go-lucky people. Why? Because it's sunshine and rainbows here. And it's, you know, San Diego's, I've adored it. I absolutely love it living here. The beaches are great.
Now, I know you're a sports fan.
Yes.
How much have you adapted? Now, who are your kind of core teams growing up? Like, your favorite fandom?
So, I'm weird. So, I've never really adopted, because, so, okay, I guess when growing up in Missouri, we had
Missouri Tigers, obviously.
Yeah, so I had my college team, but then we had some St. Louis and KC teams. You guys, LA took one of the St. Louis teams, the Rams. But, so, you know, I would root for the Royals and the Cardinals and the Rams and the Chiefs. But other than that, I'm a big NBA guy, and we didn't have an NBA team.
This is the reason I brought him in, Paulie. Like, I can have some basketball conversations with
basketball talk in.
That is my sport. I play it. I watch. Like, I'm huge. We grew up, so the closest teams were the Bulls and the Pacers in Missouri, and it was funny because everybody's a Jordan fan. I was a huge Reggie Miller fan growing up. That's like my all-time favorite guy, right? But yeah, so I've always never really adopted teams, though. I've always, like, I root for players. So right now I have some favorite players, but I'll root for any team that my favorite player is on. So if my favorite players get traded, I'm rooting for that team.
You would, I don't know if you had a chance yet to go to San Diego State basketball game.
Yes.
It is, it's a lot of fun. The program didn't used to be what it is now. In fact, when I was growing up, this might surprise you, San Diego State basketball was maybe the worst college basketball program in America.
Wow.
Before Viejas Arena.
Wow.
Paulie went to San Diego State. Now, he was there during the heyday when Kawhi was there. And
like, my first year was, we're the same class, Kawhi. So that was like their first year kind of on the map.
Wow.
And my sophomore year is the year they went 34-3 or whatever they did, the showdowns with BYU, and they've been pretty much relevant ever since.
So when I was young, they Tony Gwynn was a star basketball player late 70s, early 80s, still the all-time assist leader. And they had Michael Cage in the 80s. They played at the sports arena, now mm-hmm. Pechanga Arena, which still exists. It was even kind of getting old back then, and that was 40 years ago. So, and it's still there today, which is crazy. But the program just kept going downhill. 90s. They were playing in Little Peterson Gym on campus, which is basically like a rec gym. They're like Division I college basketball games in front of a few hundred people. And the program was like dead and buried, and no one cared about it. No one showed up for it. Last place pretty much every year. And then they hired Steve Fisher, and they built Viejas Arena, and it took a few years, but...
I'd say even his first few years...
Yeah, they were bad the first couple of years.
He was walking around campus, like, handing out tickets, like, trying
please,
to get anybody...
I'm Steve Fisher. I won a national championship at Michigan. Will you come to the game for free and watch our team play,
I'll
please?
I'll let you sit in the front row.
Yeah. So, but it took a few years, but now... It's one of the better sports watching experiences. Viejas Arena is cool. The show, the fans who get into it, it is, we lost our NBA team many, many years ago. I used to be a Clippers fan when I was a kid, go to games with my dad, and I always felt like we should get a team back at some point.
We lost
they
Rockets
never
and
did.
The Clippers.
Lost the Rockets and the Clippers, both of them. Rockets were even before my time, but my dad and grandpa went to their games and went to the Clippers games. But San Diego State basketball is right up there with the top college basketball experiences. I mean, you know, Kansas and North Carolina and Duke, it may not be quite as big as some of those arenas, but the intensity you go in there, it's a whole lot of fun. It's a really good basketball town, actually.
And that makes me happy, because that was like my one thing about San Diego. I was like, man, I wish we had an NBA team. And I've gone up to LA to watch some games and stuff like that, but I was like, man, if San Diego had an NBA team, this city would be, the best for sure. It's already the best, but it'll be even better.
But we got to get you into the Padres now, because this is ultimately
it is a Padres town.
It is a Padres town, 100%. And over the last few years, especially with the the Petco Park has been great, but then investing in the team and the playoff runs, the NLCS run of a couple of years ago, and all the moves that are made, you can see it, right? The passion for the Padres is pretty intense here.
Well, remember when I first got here, that was our first big story, me and you field anchoring from Petco Park when that amazing 2022 run, and that was amazing. Then the so much momentum last year when they added all these trades, and then we would joke about in the studio how they have this amazing team, but they can't win any games, and then this year they dial it back, and then now, okay, they're starting to win some games. So, no, yeah, the Padres are for sure San Diego's staple.
How in Boston, obviously there's a lot of passion for the Red Sox as well. Patriots, though, I mean, what did you get the sense there, like, who was dominant? Was it the Patriots just because of all the wins and Tom Brady? Or
so Boston's funny. It's Boston's probably. So I've worked on actually a lot of sports markets. So Cleveland was funny because the Browns could literally go 0-16 and it was still a Browns town. And even with LeBron James, they were crazy about the Browns. And I will say, a little plug for Cleveland. I was there for the best 2 years of Cleveland's life. I was there when LeBron announced he was coming back, and when he when they won a championship, that was actually an amazing, probably one of the most fun times in my career, being there, when LeBron, like, takes the city, I'm coming home, and then they win a championship, Kyrie hits a shot, it was crazy. I worked in New York. New York was funny because there's so much happening in New York that you can't care about the sports, because it's just like there's so much.
I always wondered, like, how do they even decide? Like, if I was doing this in New York, how would I even decide what to put on? I mean, you got more games than you can cover on every single night.
You literally have 18.
Nets, Mets, Yankees, Rangers. Giants, Jets, Rangers, Islanders, and then college teams, St. Yeah. John's, and I mean, up and down the list. Yeah, how would you ever even decide what to cover on
Bruce
a day-to-day
Beck,
basis?
Who's a legend in New York City. Yeah, I mean, the funny thing about sports in New York is, like, even the fans don't. I mean, obviously you have fans, but, like, when you're watching the newscast, it's not like, yeah, this is a top sports market and we're going to give a lot of time to sports. It has to be a huge story for sports to get any time.
Just Yankees because, in the World Series.
You know what I mean? Because it's just so much happening in New York City. It's just so crazy. So that was definitely an interesting experience. But, yeah, you're right. And I remember going to some games in New York. But, yeah, the fan base is great. But, like, as far as competition for everything else going on, yeah, it's hard to, like, fight for time in the newscast. But Boston is literally the number one sports market in the country, and I don't even think it's close. So every team, when they're doing well, we put it at the top of the newscast, because it's just a sports market. Like, it is city of champions. Everybody is cocky about it. Everybody's prideful about it. When I was there, I mean, it was fun. We, the Red Sox, they had a couple good runs. Obviously, the Celtics went to the finals. The Patriots, I was there for some of the Patriots craziness with the Tom Brady, Antonio Brown kind of craziness. That was funny. And even the Bruins. Bruins were doing well, too. So, no, Boston is a city of champions, and everybody's just, like, so proud of every single team.
All right, you're going to stick around. I got some questions for you.
Yep.
Think about this. I want to know the craziest story you've ever covered. I want to ask you about working with the queen of San Diego television, Kimberly Hunt, every single night like I do. Paulie's got a round the report as well. It is all coming up. More Bennett Woods on the way on 97.3 The Fan. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.